Radio Free Palmer, 89.5 KVRF, presents Mushing Radio, hosted by Robert Forto. Mushing Radio is about dog-powered sports, living in the Great White North, and mushing. Visit our website at mushingradio.com. Here is your host, Robert Forto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. You're listening to Mushing Radio, and this is hosted from KVRF Studios in Palmer, Alaska. And on my side is our sometimes frequent co-host, business partner, and wife, Michelle. How are you doing?
And I'm doing great.
Thanks for joining us again. It's been a while since you've been on the air. What's been going on at Team Aneke and the mushing season as it's getting ready to start here in Willow, Alaska?
Well, as you know, you've been keeping me and Nicole quite busy, as well as Tyler. The Team Aneke kennel has grown twofold this summer, and I'm looking forward to discussing that with everybody as we pull into the mushing season.
You know, about, close to a year ago, I guess, it was early last spring, if I recall, we had a guest on. His name was Joe Henderson. He is the author of Malamute Man, as well as an Arctic Explorer. And I remember talking to him on the air, and that was quite an engaging show. Do you remember Joe?
I remember.
Great to be back.
Thanks for joining us, Joe. I appreciate you being on the air with us. Here on Mushing Radio, we're doing a brand new thing. We got our show on a real radio station since you've been on. So thanks for joining us. Tell us about what's been going on since we spoke last.
Well, I did another three-month expedition on the North Slope with my 22 of my Malamutes. And we had one of the coldest winters up there in recorded history. And we had a really great trip, though. I mean, the snow conditions were fair. There are some deep areas and a lot of soft powder, but we explored a lot of country and saw quite a bit.
So refresh everybody's memory. I know when we spoke last time, you're getting ready to go out on this this latest expedition. What is the reason behind it? Are you just out there exploring, or do you have a purpose when you go? Do you take folks with you? What is it all about when you hook up these dogs and go out for several months up there in the Arctic?
Well, for me, it's personal. I choose a goal to explore. You know, many of these areas I go have never been traveled by dog team in recorded history. And so I pick a spot on the map, and it takes several seasons to get there sometimes, finding a route to it. There's a lot of mountain passes to go over and crevasses to deal with and open water sometimes. And I usually do that for the first 2 months. Now, the year before last, I did a 100-day solo, just myself. And last year, at the last month, I invited a guest along, Angus Mill. He's from England, and he joined me for 5 weeks on the last 5 weeks of the expedition. And he's a photographer, and he's got some great shots and videos to share. So basically, it's just one of my passions. It is my passion to explore the Arctic with my dogs.
And you do use Malamutes. Those are some freighting dogs from way past. You know, a lot of guys these days think of a Malamute as the family pet, but these are truly working sled dogs, aren't they?
Yeah, these guys are the workers. I mean, Alaskan Malamute, the purebred Alaskan Malamute, it'd be difficult to do such an expedition without that type of stamina and fur, thick fur coats, and their muscles and their strength and their passion to pull. They love to pull heavy weight behind them. They actually love to break trail. Many of the areas that we go through, the snow is 5 feet deep. I mean, you get off your snowshoes and you sink to your waist. You never do feel the bottom. And these guys swim right through it, smiling with wagging tails. And we're run, consistently every day for sometimes 30 or 40 days straight without taking a day off. And they just love it. In fact, they get sad if they take a day off. So these are special dogs. And they're built specifically to pull freight. They're wide. They have a very muscular, broad chest. And they are, bones are large, feet are big, and they're just solid, solid dogs.
You know, Joe, Malamute was my first Arctic breed, and I just adore them. But I'm interested in knowing, what exactly do you guys do in the summer months?
those guys, they just lay in the shade under the trees. We let them off to run occasionally. They run around the place, and they just prefer to hang out and stay cool.
True dog days of summer then up there, I'm sure. Robert and I were just up in the Fairbanks area last weekend, and it was pretty dang warm. Even for me, this California girl who loves the heat, I was pretty warm last weekend when we were up there. So I'm sure the listeners like to hear that the dogs get to spend the entire summer just laying under the shade trees and dreaming about the snow.
Yes, they do. I'm sure they dream plenty about the snow. It's funny, today I was washing up my dog trailer. I used to haul them up there, and they could actually hear the chains come out of the trailer. And they all started going nuts. I mean, they thought we were going again.
Joe Henderson is our guest. He is an Arctic explorer. He goes out for hundreds of days at a time up on trails that many people have never seen before. Joe, you had mentioned that you go out for 100 days at a time or so. Let's talk a little bit about logistics for this. How much planning goes into it? I know here it is close to mid-August now. Are you already thinking about next winter's or the next trip you're planning on, or what goes into something like this?
Oh, absolutely. My planning starts the day I get here back from a trip. All my gear is put away, and I take notes of all the gear that needs to be repaired or rebuilt. And the logistics are actually unbelievable and expensive, too. I mean, everything has to be hauled up the Dalton Highway, which is a feat in itself, and all the gear. So you try to figure what you're going to need for 100 days. And, of course, if you run out, well, that's just too bad. So there's zero tolerance for screw-ups and something like this. It's an entire 9 months of preparation.
So when you go out there for that first night and you've left civilization pretty much to your back, what goes through your mind those first few days? I know as a musher, even if I go on a trail that I've been on 100 times, there's that little bit of a wow factor every time I get on the sled. What goes on in your mind, Joe?
Well, the truth is every morning is like Christmas morning for me when I'm out there. I just love it. I look forward to the challenge. I'm going new places. There are no trails. The snow might be 4 feet deep. It might be a foot deep. I have no idea what the traveling is going to be or how many blizzards are going to run into. But the challenges I look forward to, and just being with those dogs, the first 3 or 4 nights I hardly sleep. I'm up at 3 o'clock in the morning getting ready to travel. It's just it's one of my passions. I just love it.
When we spoke last, before you headed out on this latest expedition, you talked about the bittersweet leaving behind your wife and your child. How did that go into play this year? I know you talked quite a bit about that in the last show.
Yeah, my little girl Elena is 13 months old now. She's walking around. And yes, and my beautiful wife. And yes, it's tough leaving them behind, but it's 3 months, 100 days seems like an awful long time. But, you know, it goes by so fast. And you kind of trudge along and try to focus on what you're doing and not be distracted. It's a dangerous thing. I mean, I take it very seriously, what I do. It's not a game. I want to survive to see them again. So of course, they want me to be back and safely. So it takes a lot of focus and not to get distracted.
Joe, when you're out there, I know that from being here at least 2 winters now, that the trails are always ever-changing. They're never the same. What kind of hazards do you prepare for every season?
My little girl talking.
Don't worry about her. She sounds beautiful.
Okay. She is. What I prepare for, you know, it's a deep snow, mostly, is what we run into. Since there are no trails and I have to pick a route, just by feel, basically. I want my dogs to be muscled up, rearing to go. And they're my primary focus on my fall training, you know. Of course, I have to train, too. I have to do a lot of jogging, running, snowshoeing, and skiing before I go. I keep that up the entire summer. And towards fall time, I pick up my pace. I start, rather than going every other day, I start going running every day and try to get my resting heart rate down to... It's like those trips are like running a small marathon every day. It's some days you're skiing all day, so it's relatively easy. But then if you're stuck on snowshoes for 8 hours, then you're huffing and puffing, and you get in shape pretty fast.
Joe, you had mentioned that you have a crew of, what did you say, 26 or 28 Malamutes?
I take 22 with me, and we have a total of 36. The 22 are the, we always have, I don't run my Malamutes until they're two, so we always have quite a few puppies waiting to be taken. And, of course, the older guys, they don't retire until about 11 or 12. So, and I run them around short trips and stuff when I'm here in November and December.
So you run 22 dogs at a time on the line then?
That's correct.
You know, since we started this show during the Iditarod coverage, just about all of our fans are used to hearing from guys with the names of CV and Mackie and Booser and things like that who are running these ultra-fast Alaskan Huskies, getting from point A to point B as fast as they possibly can. You're truly an old-school musher. Can you describe that for our listeners a little bit? Again, most of them are sport-oriented fans that are listening to this show. Describe this different style of mushing to folks that may not know anything about it.
Well, these are these Malamutes. I mean, they love to pull heavyweight. They don't like to run fast, so they're perfect for what I do. And I run. I hook up 22 dogs. I in deep snow, which I am going mostly in the mountains this year and last year, I'll run three abreast. And so I'll have seven rows of three dogs, and, of course, the last row I'll have four dogs, four-wheel dogs. And it's I break the trail. I mean, we're in deep snow all the time. I wear my snowshoes. My snowshoes are 6 foot long, so I can at least keep a pretty good pace. And we travel... On a good day, we travel 2.5-3 miles an hour. On a tough day, we're only average a mile an hour. But we plug along every day, and I haul three sleds behind the dogs, all hooked together. Sometimes two sleds. It depends on how much gear I need. And the sleds are large. I mean, they're like boats, and they're designed like boats actually. And so they float atop the snow. And hang on.
She's yeah, gonna be a star.
She is 1 year, 13 months old. She's playing guitar. And anyhow, this old school type mushing, as you call it, is the only way you can perform conduct these expeditions. Like I said, there are no trails. That you have to break your trail, and everything you have to go with you. I mean, as far as setting out food drops or having, you know, airplanes come in and give you food. I mean, that just wouldn't work because you never know the weather. You get a blizzard. So everything has to go with you. So if you're going for 3 months, you have to have 3 months worth of supplies with you. And you're basically on your own. There's no turning around. You get past the point of no return, and you have to just keep going.
I remember back when we had you on before here on Mushing Radio, one of our fans or followers asked us on Facebook to ask you on the next show, what do you do for entertainment for yourself out there on those 100 days of those long nights? Do you take books? Do you take some type of iPod? What do you do in that off time where you're, you know, just kicking back and trying to let the day settle a little bit?
Well, if I have time off, I mean, it's a long day. But I usually bring a few books. Last year, I brought one of those nooks, I guess, where you can load up 1,000 books into one little gadget there. And that worked really well. So I try to read a little bit in the morning and read a little bit in the evening. But mostly your days are filled with everyday chores. From the time you get up, you know, you make breakfast, of course, have your coffee and feed dogs and start breaking camp, and you travel all day and reverse, set your camp up, dinner, feed dogs, and then the day is done. I mean, you're looking at 15 hours of activity there.
And a lot of folks, again, going to that race mentality, a lot of folks don't have any idea what it takes to do a tremendously long expedition like this. This isn't like the Iditarod or something like that where it's one and done in 14 days. This is almost 4 months of time out there on the trails. How in the world do you prepare for that? You know, planning for something like the Iditarod takes a heck of a lot of time to prep the food drops and all that sort of stuff. How are you planning for 4 months in advance, in particular the dog's food and your personal gear?
I start stocking up actually dog food right now. And then, of course, my personal gear. I have to build up most of my personal gear off. My mukluks, my fur mukluks, I start sewing together with caribou in August, about now, and start preparing my clothing.
I wear a size 6, Joe.
Yeah, I wear size very large. But and then basically the gear, then the of course the gang lines I build, and the picket lines and the sleds I usually have to rebuild every 2 years. It's a long process, extremely long. Then the logistics of getting everything up there. Everything has to be coordinated just right, because the roads, you know, they close periodically. So we try to find a window where I can get up there with the dogs and have all my supplies shipped up exactly at the same time where we meet alongside the road. And everything is kicked off the trucks. Dogs are unloaded. And the trucks go away and there's no one there but me, the dogs, and an empty trailer. The vehicles aren't left or anything.
You mentioned you start on the Dalton Highway. For folks that are fans of Ice Road Truckers, that is the haul road there where you start. Where do you start in particular in relation to Fairbanks or Coldfoot or someplace like that that people have learned about on the History Channel or something like that?
I like to start right around Dead Horse. It's flat. There's no hill to climb right away. And it's usually windy, so the snow is nice and hard back. And that's about 500 miles north of Fairbanks.
And when you head up that way, do you have a support system that travels up there with you, or you go up there and, you know, like you said, the trucks go away? How do you get, do you take everything with you that first day, or do you go back and forth? Or I'm just trying to figure out how you're surviving out there from, you know, just one food drop or one pickup point, or is it kind of a process that goes back and forth?
No, it's one food drop if I'm doing a solo. And, you know, that's 3,000 pounds of dog food.
That's a lot of dog food.
Yeah, yeah. So the dogs can haul 3,500 pounds on the tundra and a little bit more on the sea ice. So I can, on the flats, starting on Dead Horse, I can load up all 3 months of supplies in one shot. Then we come to a hill or a mountain pass. Then I have to offload, and I relay the supplies over mountain passes and through across, you know, valleys that have deep snow until the load lightens. Then we don't have to do any more relays. Then I can just really, you know, get some miles. And that's how I travel. I always take everything with me, and I don't like leaving food drops because you just never know the conditions. You know, you might go back a different route. But, yeah, it's a quite a feat, but that's the reason I use the Malamutes. They don't have any problem pulling, you know, 3,000, 4,000 pounds.
That's a tremendous amount of weight. I'm always thinking my sled's too heavy, and it only has gear in it for a day or two.
Yeah, the Malamutes are very special animals, very special. They have a passion to pull heavy, heavy weight. And a lot of people don't understand this, but that is what they love to do. You know, racing dogs love to run fast. If you load up a racing dog, well, he's going to be pretty disgruntled and unhappy about that. The opposite with a Malamute. You run fast with a Malamute, they're not happy, but they love that pull. They love that, you know, feeling. In fact, when I take off with a good load, the wheel dogs, I'll have usually four wheel dogs, and maybe a few of the other dogs up ahead of them will be growling, and it sounds like an old diesel engine starting up. They're just growling, and they're letting out all their joy, basically. They just love it. Their tails curl up tight, and they so that's how they can pull that type of weight. And plus, it's a training method too. I mean, these guys are trained to pull, and that's a really in-depth technique. I mean, we normally stop a dog team, push on the brake, or set a hook or something. These guys don't use a hook or a brake. It's all verbal command. And they don't know that they can be beat. I mean, they have never been so heavy loaded that they couldn't pull it. So they don't know there is a limit. So no matter how heavy the load gets, they pull harder.
That is so cool. Like you said, the racing stock bicker a little bit if you have too heavy of a sled, and they'll look back and things like that. But these guys, you know, they dig in and they are raring to go. Whether it's they don't know the difference between 1 day and 100 days, I assume. And once you set that gear into motion, it just trolls down the tundra as best as you can, I guess.
Yeah, they don't, and they love to travel every day. They howl with sadness if we take a day off. They just love every day. Every morning when we hook up, they get so excited, and they howl. They love to howl. And they're all, you know, trained to stay. I mean, there's no harness banging or anything like that, not with those guys. And when you tell the word to go, I mean, they hit those harnesses. And like I said, someday the snow is very deep, you know, it's 3-4 feet deep. Their legs, of course, their feet never hit the tundra. And I'm up on snowshoes, so they actually swim through that and pulling. But they're wearing smiles, and they're just having the time of their life. And the following day, they look forward to doing the same thing. It's just they're amazing animals. And I really, that's one of the reasons why I just really enjoy being out with them.
We're talking to Joe Henderson. He is the author of a book called Malamute Man, and his website is AlaskanArcticExpeditions.com. We had him on the show before his latest expedition this past winter or spring. I'll get that question here in just a second. This is the first of a two-part series here on Mushing Radio. If you miss this first part or the second part, make sure you just check out mushingradio.com, and both parts will be there. The first one will air this Wednesday at 7 p.m. Joe, you had mentioned that you started off with a you caught up with a person that went along with you. Can you tell us a little bit about that? How did that all work out? Did he meet you in Dead Horse? Did he meet you somewhere along the trail? What was your guys' purpose for meeting up? Was it for that photography and for that PR stuff, or was it truly a traveling partnership?
It's truly a traveling partnership. This gentleman's been with me. This was his fourth time. He's just hooked. And he's great to be with. He's a fine photographer, and we do well together. He skis. He loves to ski, and I carry the freight, and we plug along. It's a good partnership.
Where did you guys meet up this year?
We met along the Hall Road. He flew in the dead horse, and I had a friend of mine transport him south, and I pulled up to the side of the road, and from there we took off, and he went for 5 weeks on that trip.
How is it, you had mentioned that most of the time you're out there alone and you're just, you know, in your own little world up there in the middle of nowhere. How is it having that that second person along? Sometimes it can be help and sometimes it can be a bit of a deterrent. You know, you're always having to look out for each other, that extra body to make sure everything is ebbing and flowing correctly. Did you guys ever have any issues where you had to depend on one another where you may not have had to if you're out there alone?
No, he started small trips, 10-day trips, and worked his way up to the 5-week trip. And, you know, he remembered on the, you know, I don't even have to watch him, or, you know, he's completely independent. He knows the system. He knows how to set his own tent up, and then cooks for himself. He does everything. It's almost like, you know, we will set a coordinate and we'll meet at a certain spot, or he'll keep an eye on me and kind of follow along someplace. There's many hours where I don't even see him, and he's just up in the hills skiing and kind of following along. So it goes well with him. It really does. I'm pleased to find such a great, you know, traveling partner, and very rare, actually.
I remember another question that we had on social media after our show was to ask you what you eat out there for 100 days. Was it rice, and more rice, or do you guys have a pretty different type of cuisine out there that doesn't get so old so fast?
Yeah, it's funny. One of my I guess weaknesses is that I have celiac, which is gluten intolerant. So I've been living on a no wheat, no sugar diet for many, many years, and it's a bland diet, which works out perfect for these expeditions, because all I need is meat, oils or fats, rice, and sea salt, and of course lots of coffee.
The cowboy way, do you do it that way?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I figure you weren't sipping on espressos out there on the tundra.
No, so my diet is real simple, but my body's adjusted to it, and I just thrive on it.
Joe, I definitely want to get into the terrain here in our second part of the show. But before we do, is there anything that you want to mention? We covered in the first half here about the logistics, about the expedition itself, talking about the dogs a little bit. Anything else you want to mention in the last couple of minutes of this show?
No, not really. I think it's if you really can't compare it to racing. I mean, you really can't. The training's different. Everything is different. So the difference is like night and day. The training for these guys, for these dogs, is very, very different than any other type of sled dog. That's all.
So we're talking to Joe Henderson. We're going to go ahead and close part one of The Malamute Man here, part one and part two with Joe Henderson on Mushing Radio.
And that was part one of our two-part interview with The Malamute Man, Joe Henderson. Join us next time on Mushing Radio. See you guys next time. Goodbye.